Good evening. This is Mae Brussel. The title of this broadcast is World Watchers, and it is program number 747, March the 31st, 1986. I want to begin the program by telling you that the company that was going to put live bacteria in Monterey County on the strawberry plants, called Advanced Genetic Sciences, which is actually a dummy front for a multinational corporation that involves Roman Haas, DuPont, Standard Oil, and a lot of big bucks. They have an office in Oakland, this small group, and really represent a lot of power. The Environmental Protection Agency this week took away their permit for testing, at least temporarily, because they were caught lying about where they tested before, how many trees were tested, that the effect on the trees showed sickness, and that they were supposed to not spray outdoors without permission, and they did, and they were caught with all these lies, and as a result, they're trying to blame the news media for their problems, when the truth is that in February, an unidentified whistleblower, his name hasn't been given out, I mentioned him last week, he's an employee that used to work there who said he was going to be the fall guy because the sprays were dangerous, he testified in Washington. Now, there would be no hearings in Washington if we hadn't learned about it in Monterey County because they were so secretive. So this was a case of people action getting involved in the community, and it seems at least temporarily to have stopped them, and I will continue my research on the company. The San Francisco Chronicle had a story March 25th. The United States Environmental Protection Agency levied a $20,000 fine against AGS, Advanced Genetic Sciences, and suspended their permit to launch the first outdoor test of genetically altered bacteria. The EPA officials accused them of falsifying research report that they used it to seek a federal permit in Monterey County. The action marked the first penalty ever leveled by the agency involving organisms produced by gene splicing. Now, this is a company that had a first, they were the first time in the world that genetically altered bacteria was going to be put onto food in the open air and released to the elements. And it's a first that the agency, this agency involving organisms and gene altering, was caught lying. That's how dangerous gene altering is. It began or was most famous with Joseph Mengele, but here we have it in California related to multinational, a lot of money and big firms wanting to turn it into a $20 billion industry. The Oakland company, according to the San Francisco Chronicle, had already received federal and state permits to conduct their open test until this whistleblower came along, and he exposed the fact that the company had sprayed their organism on 45 fruit and nut trees in Oakland, California. Oakland is a predominantly black area. They had a greenhouse, and they let the spray put out in the open where air and wind, by their own admission, could cause problems, and air and wind is on the open roof. They were supposed to use the greenhouse. The article goes on, other field tests this summer can measure the ability of bacteria to form colonies outdoors. However, to company scientists, they have to wait with frostban until it gets colder. Of course, they did have to admit that they tested bacteria on 45 dormant cherry, peach, apricot, plum, pear, and almond trees that was supposed to be inside a greenhouse last February and actually was conducted outdoors on a roof. The trees were not dormant. The open-air experiment was in direct violation to environmental protection rules, and the report was knowingly false. Now, the company moved in secretly. Nobody in the county health department knew about it or the supervisors. What were they hiding? And they had already tested, even though they moved secretly into this area, they'd been testing it since February. The head of the company, President Joseph Boukert, and that's the same man I talked about last week, who flies in from Belgium back and forth from Europe and won't put this in Belgium to test it, but wants it in the Salinas salad bowl of the world. He said at no time did the company knowingly falsify any information. And of course, that is a lie because he assumed or thought the Environmental Protection Agency would believe that the testing that was inside, but they never said that it was outside. They just assumed it was inside because that's where the permit was for doing it elsewhere. And it's a play on words because they're guilty and that's why they're permit has been taken away. The scientists considered that injecting the bacteria beneath the bark of a varied group of trees outdoors on the rooftop would be as good as any confined facility like a greenhouse. Now, they also said that it could spread, and they would test how far it travels. So how could it be as good in a greenhouse as the open if you're testing the spreading? The data from the controversial experiment, according to those AGS people, proved definitely the bacteria would damage neither tree nor environment. You spray in February and you prove in January or March the next year that there was no problem. How do you know who in Oakland was sick, who got cancer, who would get particles of bacteria? I don't know how fast it travels. It multiplies very quickly. Their statistics were almost as quickly as AIDS in the way it multiplies. And how can they say this proves that nothing happened because the people don't even know what's on the roof or what came down on them? And I'm sure the doctors in Oakland don't have the faintest idea of what's going on. Mr. Buchart said his scientists have already proposed repeating the test in a completely enclosed environment, and they've invited the EPA to oversee it. Now, what's safe indoors and doesn't affect you, okay, you have a can, you spray it, and they say, yeah, I spray it, nothing happens, it didn't die, it didn't turn red or green, so it's safe. It's the long-range effect, and these are just childish and unscientific ways of saying, let us prove to you that it's all right. The agency found no evidence to indicate that it would be likely to result in any significant risk to human health or environment. That's what the EPA said. Well, it wasn't likely that the space shuttle would blow up or that the second ring wouldn't hold, even though they didn't have a backup, because the first never failed, and it's not likely that these things happen, but they happen. The EPA said they're bending over backwards to encourage development of this technology and major new diagnostic and therapeutic tools for medicine and new types of crops that would resist insects and disease. This wasn't for disease. This isn't a pesticide. It was to stop the freezing, and also it could affect humans and the immune system. The Monterey Herald also had a story on this because it is a local story, and it tells how the chief financial advisor of the firm said that they had ruled in a way that is not detrimental to the company. It won't hurt us at all. We'll just have stricter protocols and control in the future, but we'll go on doing what we're going to do. They're disappointed that temporarily they got a slap on the wrist, but they will be back in action. They have guaranteed us in some form. There is another part of the Monterey Herald that says it is disturbing to realize that the frost ban experiment could have already been conducted with falsified data and inherent risks involved. And it has not been for, if it had not been for the probing of local citizens, it never would have come to our attention. And that is true. The local people really got off their butts and got together at that meeting I've described for you and brought this thing out in the open. One of the injection sites last year showed evidence of a canker, and I believe I mentioned that to you last week. When the Environmental Protection Agency read the report, the company should have mentioned the canker on the test application. There were pictures of disease on the trees. They wrote a report that said there was no pathogenic results, and the EPA said the failure to do so constituted falsifications of their application. Mr. Buchart said that while we're disappointed that temporarily we'll be delayed with frost ban, we have full confidence that we will continue and proceed later. And his problem, again, is due in part to allegations in the media. We have to restore the confidence of the scientific community. Well, what confidence would you give the scientific community if the same people behind this organization were behind IG Farben and the scientists at Auschwitz and at the other places where people were experimented on for purposes of the government before and then came to this country and incorporated themselves into corporations and medical schools and scientific institutions? Now, there have been several articles about up in Washington, Hanford, Washington, the testing of the nuclear release into the air. One article from the San Francisco Chronicle, huge World War II radioactive legacy. 340,000 curies were released in Washington state. They knew that. They came out of smokestacks in 1945 out of the chemical plants. Hundreds of thousands of curies of radioactive iodine from the Hanford nuclear reservation in the early 40s, and the government locked up the information about these tests. And last month, 19,000 pages of records of environmental effects on Hanford from the time it was established in 1943 to 1985 were declassified. Now they have to test problems in the area near the nuclear facilities, because a while back the farmers were complaining by the Columbia River that they had deaths, birth defects, sheep and livestock that were sick, and the wind would go downward, and they were concerned about their own health. So if you leave matters to the scientists, they are experimenting on you, and you find out years later that iodine falls to the ground, that it's consumed by grazing animals, that it enters the human body, it could come through milk, and people who might have gotten sick might have moved away, hundreds of them, and went other places, and there was no record that they were the victims of a purposeful test. Another article from a world watcher in Oregon who sent me so much good material. This is from the Oregonian, March 14th, 1949, Hanford release called intentional. Now, there's the Department of Energy, so you trust the EPA, you trust the energy, and Mr. Bugard says with AGS, trust the scientists, okay? And in this case, the scientists were working for intelligence purposes with the new CIA in 1947-48. They were releasing this material, and they were studying what would happen when these nuclear devices get in the air, and they wanted to establish, in quotes, their methodology for intelligence purposes. The excuse is, if you have to work with the Soviet Union, and if they exploded a nuclear device, we have to find out what happens. So they tested humans and animals and released radioactive vapor up in the state of in Oregon, the Hanford Nuclear Reservation, that affects Oregon and Washington State, and let this vapor out in the air that is very, very dangerous and could cause thyroid and other problems. This idea that the scientists or the government agents, the Environmental Protection Agency, Protection, is like the Department of Defense, their Department of War, and the Department of Experimentation. And now they're going into the Indian Health Service, because many Indians live up that way in Oregon and Washington, and check out the Indian Tribal Public Health Facilities. And the Center for Disease Control out of Atlanta, Georgia, will go up and do the work. They come in and do the wipe up, and can, the Department of Energy can do the experiments, and then they come in later and can work on how many people were sick, how many have thyroid or defective children are stillborn, and so forth. A very dangerous situation, because our government experiments on us all over the place. In every kind of institution and public facility that you can imagine, there are records of them experimenting on us. It is them against us, and the excuse is that someday you'll fight the Soviet Union. And meanwhile, one out of every five people here has cancer. I just want to do one item on the investigation of the Challenger, because I've done so much in the past few weeks. But there was an article in the LA Times this past week that various engineers and people working with the space program are angry at William Rogers because he seems to want to find a blame for the problem. Maybe you saw this article, or maybe you didn't. The tone and manner of the Presidential Commission investigating the Challenger disaster is drawing a lot of criticism from the engineering community and from the Defense Department. They use the word witch hunt because here's one professor, James C. Williams, Dean of College of Engineering, Carnegie Mellon. The investigation seems to be drifting in the direction of the witch hunt, and that's not constructive. Of course, the Mellons are very big into the Heritage Foundation, and I've done programs into the link of the Heritage with the demise of the shuttle as excuse to build, put the money to the Star Wars and to the new airplane, the transatmospheric airplane, and then make the shuttle private, and then they can do their own experiments and so forth in privacy without anybody butting in. So out of the Carnegie Mellon group, they're objecting to this witch hunt. Another person, Robert Cooper, a former Assistant Secretary of the Defense, a former NASA official, says they're looking for a smoking gun. William Rogers has already said that the NASA decision-making is flawed. Well, they should look for a smoking gun. There were suggestions right off the bat that it was murder, that seven people died that didn't necessarily have to die, and the people that sent them up knew that those conditions might almost guarantee their death. And this isn't an engineering problem. I mentioned that last week and the weeks before. This hasn't got to do with parts. This has to do with decisions made to try and push parts that don't work under those conditions. So another former scientist from University of California was complaining. He's also a scientist for the Air Force. There aren't two answers, right and wrong, guilt or innocent. I think that's the way lawyers approach things in courtrooms. Well, in this case, there are answers of right or wrong, because if they all waited till it was the hottest day, if there was no cold, if there were no problems with the machinery, if all the parts had been checked out and right, if there weren't a long list of problems that they set it up with that, then you would say this is beyond our control. It just happened that way. But given all the flaws and all the indications that somebody didn't even want this ship to ever get off the ground, or that the shuttle programs would be put on hold while they got contracts for new ones and for other Star Wars and other matters, it isn't a question of machinery or engineering, and they want it to be that way. Again, a professor from MIT, Gerald Wilson, is saying that there's too much interest in the news media and that the investigative process is ruined by the media. The media is the whipping boy at the Watergate trials, at the Korea Gate, and many of these sensational investigations. They are sensational because of the flaws that took place. And when the media covers it, if the media finds this live bacteria that they've already sprayed and lied about, it's the media's fault. If the media finds a problem with the decision, with the minds of the people that forced the shuttle to go, then the media's at fault. So that's a good whipping boy, and they used it one more time. Now, Libya is in the news, so I thought I better do a little material on that. All week we have seen this Libyan story unfold, and the American ships go right to the Gulf of Sidra, where they can provoke a reaction. It's similar to Ronald Reagan and the Korean airline crossing over that safe space into Russia to provoke a shootout as an excuse for more weapons, the deployment of the Pershings, the MS, the Star Wars. Here is Caspar Weinberg in the newspaper. He's got a chart. He changes the pages like they do in grammar school. 2 years ago it was Grenada, and you saw a huge airstrip where the Russians are landing with their big planes. So we have to go in and kill Maurice Bishop and take the airstrip. We find out it's really for the tourist business as planned originally. He holds a chart for Honduras or for Guatemala a long time ago, or Nicaragua and Angola or Afghanistan. He's always got that chart. It's getting so tiresome, and he has that little picture of the Gulf of Sidra. The San Francisco Chronicle had a list of about 18 different events that brought a deterioration into the relationship with Libya and the United States, and all of them are really ridiculous. I'm not even going to spend time listing them, a couple of them. November 1981, reports surfaced that Libya had sent hit squads to America to assassinate Ronald Reagan and George Bush. The government beefs up security. Reports that Libya was going to come and kill them could be CIA disinformation. That's not a reason to attack them. He had no reason to kill the president or vice president. He wouldn't gain very much from it. He has another reason. 19 people were killed in a guerrilla attack at the Vienna and Rome airport, and Reagan accuses Libya of complicity in the assaults carried out by Arab gunmen. Well, in the past interim since that time, it has come out that the black children, those males down in Atlanta, Georgia, were probably or possibly killed by members of the Ku Klux Klan, and not Wayne Williams, who's serving time in jail, and that case is going to be opened up. So you have 20 or 30 people, American citizens, killed in America. That's no reason to invade Atlanta, Georgia, or go down to Georgia. It would be a good reason, but we don't go down there to see what's going on. And Jonestown, when the people cried for help and there were deaths down there, American citizens, we certainly had no interest in them. It can't be because 19 people were killed in Vienna and Rome that we are spending over $1 million a day that we don't have over there in Libya. And we're constantly, we build Gaddafi up. Carlos worked with the CIA, and Mr. Samuel Cummings of InterArms, and Edwin Wilson and Frank Turpel. And they hired people, the Green Berets, and the Defense Intelligence Agency was sending the material, and the Defense Department from China Lake in California and Texas and Houston, all over. We have worked with Gaddafi, and he was trained by Otto Skorzeny, one of Hitler's top people. So what is this little scene that is going on? Last week I mentioned the Anthony Sutton newsletter on the Challenger and the suggestion of a possible foul play with that. The motive is probably being or could be sabotage. And I just want to quote some sections of Anthony Sutton's reference to what the Brotherhood does to cause violence on both sides, a confrontation, a revolution, and these wars to keep things going constantly. And he says this is the result of what he calls the Brotherhood. He has done a lot of work, as I say, into the Skull and Bones, an organization that George Bush is a member of. He's written three books on the Brotherhood. One, he's also written on the Trilateralists, Over Washington, The Rise of Hitler, National Suicide, Wall Street, and the Cuban Revolution, The Order Controls Education, and now he has The Brotherhood Foments Revolution. And he talks about the Brotherhood of Death. The Brotherhood of Death books, incidentally, are available. I think it's $29 for the three of them. And I'll get the address where you can order and put on the sheet that accompanies this broadcast. But Richard Landkammer, a gentleman that keeps reading Anthony Sutton's newsletters and books, wrote to Ronald Reagan a letter June the 1st, 1984, asking about George Bush, who belongs to the secret organization, the Skull and Bone Society. It's legally incorporated as the Russell Trust Association. And he talks about Bush's role in the order and the order's role in creating war and revolution, that this is how they work. This organization that he says where these people like George Bush stand naked over coffins and so forth, the Skull and Bones thrives on death and confrontation. And Landkammer wrote a letter to Honorable Ronald Wilson Reagan, June 1st, 1984, and he talked about, quoting Anthony Sutton's work on the creation of war and revolution, and he says the operational history of the order can only be understood within a framework of a process whereby conflict creates history. The practice by the order of supporting both right and left persists down to the present day, and this would be applicable to Gaddafi, who allegedly is left that we support, but who really belongs to the very far right. In his book, he says, in fact, there is another largely unrecorded history that tells a story different than what our sanitized textbook does. It tells a story of the deliberate creation of war, the knowing and financing of wars and revolutions to change governments, and the conflict to create a new world order. And the creation of this continues, whether like George Bush's family, he cites, because Bush is a member of the Skull and Crossbones and his father was. They were very active in their politics with the Nazi Party in Germany. He cites that, and I wasn't aware that the Bushes were financing the Nazi Party in Germany. And then they were involved in the early development of the Soviet Union. And then they were behind the scenes vaguely in Angola. And then Bush was active as the UN ambassador at Communist China, in Communist China. Now he wants to send atomic weapons to Communist China. And the theme of these books that Anthony Sutton's written are on the conflict of the same people working together, such as Otto Skorzeny, who worked for the CIA, and Adolf Hitler, can train Gaddafi when he's a young man, and the CIA can send him his weapons and the things that he's shooting the Americans with, and they make him out to be a leftist while they create this little monster out of a laboratory, sort of, and then send all our fleet down there to confront him for whatever reasons, and I'll go into what I think a couple of them are that are pretty complex. Now, along those lines, there was a story March 24th, just this last Monday, in LA Times and San Francisco Chronicle, U.S. envoy under fire for secret Libyan talks. The U.S. ambassador to the Vatican, a Knight of Malta, William Wilson, held an unauthorized secret meeting with Gaddafi in January. Now, Reagan knew weeks ago he was going over there into this area, and in January, Wilson goes over to meet with Gaddafi. Schultz, George Schultz, Secretary of State, told Wilson, a longtime California friend of Ronald Reagan, that he was acting beyond his powers and he shouldn't do it again, but he had some special message for Gaddafi before these confrontations took place. The move by Wilson, a controversial director of Pennzoil Company, which has a business dealing with Libya, didn't help or hinder the United States-Libyan relationships. But it goes on, Mr. Wilson remains a director of both Pennzoil and the Earl M. Jorgensen Company. Jorgensen was one of the early kitchen cabinet, along with Wilson, of Ronald Reagan, despite State Department guidelines that says, as a rule, persons appointed positions requiring Senate confirmation must resign from directorship positions in for-profit corporations when there's no compensation, even if there's none of that. No explanation has been offered for Wilson being apparently having an exception to the rule. Now, Ronald Reagan's friend William Wilson is not only part of Pennzoil, their investments come from Libya, and he's on the board of Mr. Jorgensen, another great pal of Ronald Reagan's. But Reagan is screaming and yelling about Gaddafi and his very closest advisor, not only personal friend, but he handles all Ronald Reagan's personal money, helped him with the tax breaks, buying the ranch and all that. And Reagan appointed him to be ambassador to the Vatican, a very controversial story in itself. And here he's down there with Gaddafi, and his oil money comes from Libya. The Chronicle goes on, sources in Washington said Wilson had been annoyed. He annoyed the State Department officials because at one time he had been suspect in a Vatican bank case. He asked the United States Attorney General, because of his friendship, claiming close friendship with the president, to interfere with the Holy See in competition with the U.S. Embassy in Rome. And he was also working for Paul Marcinkus to get his criminal charges dropped, and working in the Vatican and with Gaddafi, with the Pennzoil. And Ronald Reagan is screaming and yelling, which is totally ridiculous and has no meaning considering his closest friend and one of his ambassadors, the controversial ambassador, is making his money out of Libya and visiting Libya just prior to this event. Another story out of the Monterey Herald, U.S. envoy reprimanded with Libyan, with meeting with Libyan, and it goes on to the fact, and similar to the other one, about William Wilson, our ambassador to the Vatican, going down to Libya. Now, there's a small newsletter called, it's Coalition Close Up. It's put out by a group in Washington, D.C. In the fall of 1985, they had a small article, Ronald Reagan's Religion as a Cause of World War III. And a friend of mine mailed this to me. I appreciate this. A listener to World Watchers, a subscriber. This is at the time the president was going to the summit meeting. And the gist of this article is that Ronald Reagan has his fixation about Armageddon, and he links it to a biblical prophecy that Libya will be among those people that will send us into World War III, and he therefore believes he has to take on Libya. Now, this is very important to Ronald Reagan's psyche, that he has to go there for some reason, because if you attack Libya, it may bring out a chord of discontent among the other Arab population, and that would hurry up the Armageddon that he's waiting to see and has believed in for a long time. The article is by Michael Ferber. And this is the way it goes. I'll read you parts of it. Since becoming a candidate for president in 1980, Reagan has made a number of remarks in public and private about his strong interest in biblical prophecies of Armageddon. In 1980, he said on the Jim Baker Show, "We may be the generation that sees Armageddon." March 81, reported by Jerry Falwell, he said, "I believe we're heading very fast for the Armageddon right now." October 81, he reported to Senator Heflin of Alabama at a White House meeting, Russia is going to get involved in it, in the Armageddon. And October 1983, reported to Thomas Dine of the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, "You know, I turn back to your ancient prophets of the Old Testament, the signs foretelling Armageddon, and I see myself wondering if this is the generation where it's going to come about." In December 1983, in People magazine, he said theologians are studying their prophecies, the coming of Armageddon, and it seems that in the past people talked about this, but the world seems to be going in that direction. In 1971, with California State Senator James Mills, who wrote about the meeting, he talked about the Armageddon, and he also had a conversation that led to the nuclear Armageddon, and referred to Ezekiel, the 38th chapter of Ezekiel, and ungodly nations, and it said Libya will be among them, and Libya was part of his conversation in 1983 about the necessity for an Armageddon. We'll take a 1-minute break and continue with Libya and the fixation of the president and what I think is going on right now. And the connections of him to American corporations.